Morning, Counsel.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Bernard Jeweler. I represent Downtown Bid Services Corporation, which is a local employer in the District of Columbia. The board in this case seeks enforcement of an order to bargain against my client with the Machinist Union based on an election that was conducted about a year and a half ago. The company filed timely objections to the election. There was a hearing held on the objections. The administrative law judge recommended the objections be overruled, and the board affirmed that. It is the company's position. First of all, I would emphasize that the vote in the election was 56-51 with one challenge ballot, meaning that a shift of 2-3 votes could have changed the outcome. And as an overall proposition, with all due respect, it is our position that the board here has failed miserably in its duty to police the laboratory conditions that are supposed to surround an election.
My math correct that 8 different employees were intimidated to the extent that they were told they'd lose their jobs if they didn't support the union? This was done by 4 members of the organizing committee on behalf of the union, and that at least 3 or 4 of them believed it to the extent that they went to the employer to make sure that that wasn't true.
That is correct, Judge Anderson.
All right. Yes. Would 4, what was the, 4 would change the result?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And in some instances, they went back to management more than once with that concern. I think there was some evidence, a couple of people came 3 different times, and tearfully. I mean, I realize subjective evidence maybe not won't carry the day, but this was a very emotional hearing.
We have one person who never did vote.
That's correct. Okay. Came into the polling area, saw the main union organizer, and said, I can't do this, and turned around and left.
What's our standard of review here, Counsel?
Well, I think the ultimate question is whether the board abused its discretion, but as I read some of the court's opinions, the court does say that the board's conclusion still must be supported by substantial evidence. Yes. So, Your Honor, there's really two levels of analysis here. One is, were these members of the in-plan organizing committee properly, or should they have been considered agents of the union? And even if not, if this was, in the board's parlance, third-party conduct, was it of sufficient gravity to set aside this election?
The organizing committee members are not, per se, agents of the union, are they?
Agreed. Agreed. But I think here, Your Honor, the facts are somewhat unique, as we argued in the brief. The main organizer here, the employee organizer, was a gentleman named Jennings Brown, and the union was entirely his idea. He actually went shopping for a correct union to represent these employees. And after some interviews, as found by the administrative law judge, he settled on the Machinist Union. It wasn't vice versa.
That makes me wonder if it is appropriate to consider them agents of the union. They were acting as employees seeking to organize.
Yes.
They found a union that they were willing to affiliate with, but at what point did they become agents of the union as opposed to, particularly Mr. Brown, as opposed to employees who wanted to organize and found a union that could help them?
I understand, Your Honor. I think the evidence here is very strong that the union itself, the IAM, played really a secondary role here. Mr. Brown, again, found the union. Everybody who testified in this hearing testified that they considered Mr. Brown to be, in essence, I think the phrase they used was the big dog behind the union. Mr. Brown, the evidence showed, was in constant contact with Mr. Littlejohn, who was the IAM paid staff representative. Mr. Littlejohn said in his testimony that Mr. Brown was the most vocal supporter of the union. There was admissions that, in the, particularly in the week prior to the election, that in essence, Mr. Brown was the eyes, ears, sounding board, and liaison between the IAM, Mr. Littlejohn, and the employees. Mr. Littlejohn also said that there was no training done. He clearly authorized the employees, there's no dispute, to solicit union authorization cards on behalf of the IAM.
Is that enough to make out agency?
It gets close, Your Honor. It gets close. And we would contend that given the other factors here, some of which I've just gone through, that it ought to tip over. Clearly, I mean, one cannot read the record in this case without coming away with the notion that, and I'm repeating myself, but it needs to be repeated, Mr. Brown was the big dog. Mr. Brown was running this show.
I don't know why that would make him an agent of the union.
Well, in the eyes of the employees, he was an agent of the union. And I think the union was in such close contact with him that they had some duty, Your Honor, with all due respect, to supervise him and these other people who, you know, forgive me with a little bit of hyperbole, but they, in essence, verbally terrorized these people. Again, one cannot read the record in this case without feeling that the company and the employees really got a raw deal, and that all we asked for was a rerun election. We're not saying, you know, we just want a situation in which the employees are not in constant fear that if they don't support the union, they're going to lose their jobs.
Well, I think two things are important. One, you call this Brown a gentleman. I'd call him a bully and a racist to begin with. And you couple that with the closeness of the election and even the language in overnight transportation about a general atmosphere of fear and reprisal rendering a free election impossible. I don't know about impossible, but it certainly was unlikely.
Well, Judge Henderson, I called him a gentleman because I really believe that your remarks are more accurate, but I didn't want to...
I would have jumped on you if you had, you knew.
Well, I figured maybe. So I thought I'd be a little cautious, but he's a scalawag, let's put it that way. That's a general term that can fly both ways. We cited a case in our a brief that I think is really close on its facts here, and it's called Kentucky Tennessee Clay. It's a Fourth Circuit case, and it goes to the issue of whether remarks of this kind, to the effect of if you don't support the union, I'm still going to be here, but you're not going to be, threats of that nature, are realistically, can realistically be viewed by employees as threats, because the opposite argument is, well, employees, all employees supposedly know that it's only the, you know, the employer that can fire them. Well, the court in Kentucky Tennessee Clay addressed that issue. And on facts very similar, because again, in that case, you had one sort of kingpin of the campaign who was a rank and file employee, not a union agent, who made a lot of the threats. And the court said, we are satisfied on this record that the union could make good on their threats either by setting up the employees to be fired or by making the employees' working conditions so miserable that they would feel they had to quit. And that, I think, is... I think the board's view, a little bit ivory tower, that it's impossible for employees to be intimidated, coerced by a statement that says the union is going to see that you're not here anymore. That, you know, every employee supposedly knows that only the employer has the power to do this, I think is not realistic. It's just not realistic. And this is an aggravated case. It's a case that really cries out for relief, it seems to me. You know, apropos of Judge Henderson's remarks that Mr. Brown was a bully and a racist, there was a particular instance in the record in this case where in the employee lunchroom, after an employee had refused to sign a card, Mr. Brown called him an obscene name, MF, and then said, screaming in the lunchroom, full of employees, all of these MFs are going to have to deal with the union. So you follow that with, you know, three or four employees coming to management time and time and time again, some in tears. It just cries out for a new vote. It really does. Even if it's, and maybe I'm repeating myself, but even if it's deemed third-party conduct, it seems to me that it's extreme enough that the court ought to deny enforcement of the board's order, send it back, let the board hold a rerun election. Just checking my notes to see. You know, there is, let me conclude my major remarks with this one point. There is a line of board cases that say that when the board empowers employees to solicit cards for them, they are the union's agent for purposes of fee waivers and for other union policies. And in this case, a lot of these, I mean, these whole, all these things were all surrounding the idea of you're not going to sign a card. I'm going to end up being here, but you're not. So it was all part of the solicitation. Yet the board says we couldn't prove that it actually happened in the same conversation where the solicitation occurred. That, to me, is elevating form over substance. With that, I would like very much to save the rest of my time, unless the court has questions.
Seeing none, we'll hear from the respondent.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Meelakshmi Rajapaksa. I'm counsel for the National Labor Relations Board. I'd like to begin because company counsel places a great deal of emphasis on what Mr. Brown did. So I'd just like to remind the court what the evidence is as to what he did. He made two statements about potential job loss to two employees, Fry and Dantzler. And in addition, in relation to Dantzler, he pressed him. He engaged in pressing what Dantzler himself called pressing solicitations and called him a punk. There's no evidence that Mr. Brown actually made any racist comments to either of these employees. So that is really the extent of the evidence relevant to objections 1 and 2, which relate to alleged threats.
Who called somebody a stupid N-word? Who was that?
That was Mr. Coleman. That was Mr. Coleman. So looking at that evidence, the board found that those comments to two employees in a unit of 117 did not create a general atmosphere of fear and reprisal, rendering a free election impossible, which is, of course, the standard that this court acknowledged in overnight transportation, as Judge Henderson pointed out. In terms of the question whether that standard applies turns on whether the employee who made the statements is considered an agent of the union. And company counsel has argued that Mr. Brown, in particular, was a general agent of the union, and the board submits that there's simply no evidence to support that argument. Agency, under the common law principles that this court and the board applies, An employee's agency status depends on whether they received actual authorization from the union to act for it, or whether they had apparent authority. And really the key here in this case is apparent authority, because there's absolutely no evidence of actual authorization for Mr. Brown to go about doing all of the things that he did. So as to apparent authority, the evidence fails to show that the union did anything, made a manifestation that Mr. Brown was acting as the union's agent. And that is really the crucial piece of evidence that is missing in this case to establish apparent authority. Moving on to the other employees who are alleged agents, their agency status is entirely dependent on their role in card solicitation. And as Judge Sintel suggested, there are certain limitations on the agency that attaches to card solicitation. So when a union gives authorization cards to an employee and charges them with passing them out and getting signatures, the employee is effectively given actual authority to solicit cards, and in addition, apparent authority to make statements related to the subject matter of the cards. And as the board found in this case, there's no evidence that any of the statements at issue related to the subject matter of the cards. So even if some of the statements, particularly the harassing statements, were made during the course of card solicitation, they have no relationship that's shown in the record to the subject matter of the cards or union policies about fee waivers or anything of that nature. So for these reasons, the board applied the third-party standard, which is the general atmosphere of fear and reprisal standard, and found that there was no objectionable conduct under objections 1 and 2. Turning to objections 3 and 4, which company counsel is not addressed in his argument, but I'll briefly address them. These two objections allege that Mr. Brown, in his capacity as an observer at the election, engaged in certain inappropriate activities that warrant setting aside the election. Specifically, the allegation is that Mr. Brown took a cell phone call during a break when no voters were around. Of course, the board's view is that that can have had no impact on the election, on the voters' choice.
Is it improper for him to have done so?
He was given permission by the board agent to make a phone call, and then he also received a phone call, and this was all during a break. So the board's view is that it was not inappropriate. In addition, the allegation in objection 4 is that Mr. Brown made certain movements in the polling area while the voting was taking place and made certain gestures, smiling at voters who were coming in, and so on. But again, there's no showing that this had any substantial impact on any voter.
How would there ever be?
If, Your Honor, under this court's U-Haul decision, U-Haul of Nevada, gestures alone appear to be not enough. There has to be something more than that, which would be talking to a voter, instructing them as to how to vote. That would certainly be enough. But nothing of that nature happened in this case.
Go back to the other objections. The ALJ begins his discussion on objection 2, I think. The record evidence established that a number of employees, particularly the in-plant supporters, committee members, were particularly aggressive during the organizing drive. Indeed, some of these individuals were especially persistent in their efforts to make sure employees signed an authorization card or voted for union representation. And then he goes through the detail. He gets to the incident with the racial comment directed at Calhoun and says, these comments were not uncommon at the employer. While he was disappointed, this is Calhoun, that such comments were made, it did not dissuade him from participating in the election process. Is the board actually saying that they're going to tolerate particularly aggressive organizing, especially persistent efforts using racial comments, so long as there's no evidence that somebody said, and for these reasons, I didn't vote?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor.
What is that sentence doing in there?
I'm sorry, which sentence?
It did not dissuade him from participating in the election process. I mean, that's, to me, I'm the only reason it's in there, the only reason it's relevant is that the ALJ felt that as long as he wasn't stopped from voting by this, it was all right. And the fact that these epithets were used, I guess, at this employer were not uncommon.
Right. I mean, the board's view is that we have to remember what the standard is in these election cases. And with third-party comments like this, the standard is general atmosphere of fear and reprisal. And, of course, the board will look at, for example, whether the news of this comment spread beyond Mr. Calhoun and went throughout the unit, and the fear so permeated things that it made a free election impossible. So that would be a very different situation.
What about the fact that, you know, you keep calling these people third parties? They are fellow employees, and after this election is over, they've got to work with each other every day.
That's correct. Third parties, Your Honor, I'm just using it as a term of art. There are parties to the election, and those are the employer and the union. And third parties are basically the employees.
That's a fair point. What I'm saying is that I realize the law recognizes the difference between union agents and third parties. But when these are fellow employees in a small outfit, and they've been particularly aggressive and unusually persistent, using racial epithets, it paints a pretty grim picture of when this election is over, whichever way it went, and particularly if it had gone the other way.
Right. Your Honor, the only comment I can make on that, and this is somewhat beyond what's in the papers in this case, is that the evidence does show that in general, not just during this campaign, Mr. Brown has a bullying sort of personality. That's true. But what the board had to look at is whether in connection with this campaign, his behavior was so particularly egregious that it warranted a new election. And the board's finding that there was not enough evidence to show that is really supported by the record. As to objection number five, which was really about the union selection of Brown as an observer, the board stated in its brief, this objection was waived because it was not argued in the employer's opening brief. And I think the board will just rest on the comments in the brief about objection five, because...
Can I ask you to address, I don't remember the ALJ saying anything about the closeness of the election.
That's
correct. To me, that's very important in this case, because you have eight people, at least, who were told they were going to lose their jobs, four of whom I think were so worried about it they checked with the employer, and that would have been enough to change the result.
Right, and it would have been enough to warrant perhaps a new election if the people involved in that, in the conduct, were parties. Because under the party standard, which is a more stringent standard, under the standard for agents, for union agents, there the margin of victory would have been relevant. But in this case, because the standard is general atmosphere of fear and reprisal, what the board looks at is the number of employees who were affected relative to the overall size of the voting population. And so when you look at things that way, under the third-party standard, eight employees in a unit of 117 does not establish a general atmosphere of fear and reprisal. If the court has no further questions for me, we'll rest on our brief. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, counsel. How much time do you have left?
2 minutes remaining.
Counsel, we'll hear you in rebuttal if you so desire.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Just some really quick points. When counsel for the board said that Mr. Brown was not the one who used the N-word with employee Coleman, I can't remember the name of the employee, but there was one that you mentioned. The person who made that comment was also a member of the in-plant organizing committee.
Is your agency case the same with respect to all members as it is with Brown?
Yes. I mean, it's stronger with Brown.
Okay.
Sure. As far as accounts for the board statement that the union didn't do anything affirmatively to make these people their agents, I submit respectfully that that's one of the problems here. The union set up Mr. Brown in a situation where the union had a duty to supervise the man, and they didn't. And one of the problems is that they sat back and let him run the show, and what we got is what the record shows.
I'm not sure how the union can keep him from running the show. If you have a pro-union, pro-organization employee in a shop and he wants to organize the shop, is there really any way the union can prevent him from doing what he did here?
Well, I think they can make reasonable inquiry if they've given him cards to solicit, which they certainly did.
That's your best case, is your card solicitation.
Yes.
I don't see how simply being a pro-organization employee who's active in the organization drive can convert into agency.
I agree.
By itself, with the cards. Okay, that's a slightly different argument, but.
No quarrel with that, Your Honor. All I'm saying is that he was given the power to solicit, and in all the circumstances of this case, I think it's fair to say that the union should have trained him, which they admit they didn't, and should have inquired periodically as to what he was doing.
We have talked to you past your 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate
it. Unless my colleagues have questions. Seeing none, case is submitted.
Thank you.